So let's sit quietly just for a few minutes. Just landing here in the hall. Landing in your posture. Landing in your body. So good morning, everybody. What we're going to do in this session is to continue our journey through the four foundations of mindfulness, the four establishings of mindfulness. We spoke about the body, which is the first foundation and the foundation that remains always. And paying attention to a part of the body, to the sensations of the body, to the breath, to the posture, to the activity we are doing, the movement of the body. Gavin spoke yesterday about the hindrances, which is in the fourth foundation. And today we are going to speak about the second foundation, which is the foundation of Vedana. And I am using the word in the Pali language because it is difficult to translate this word Vedana. V-E-D-A-N-A. Which sometimes it is translated as feeling or feeling tone, but I think that can be misleading because it is not about feelings as emotions. It's something more basic. It's the hedonic tone of experience. And hedonic comes from hedone, which is a Greek word that means pleasure. So the hedonic tone of experience is what comes associated with any experience we have as pleasant or unpleasant. And normally with whatever experience we have in any of the six senses, that experience elicits in our being, in our organism, a sensation of pleasantness or unpleasantness or something in between. And for example, in this moment, if we, rub gently, I mean, you can do that if you want. If you rub gently, caress gently your cheek, maybe you feel that as slightly pleasant. But if you pinch your cheek, you may experience that as unpleasant. And if you bring your attention to your earlobe, that may feel quite neutral, neither pleasant nor unpleasant. So I don't know if you noticed that I said six senses. Whatever thing we experience in our six senses brings associated a sense of being pleasant or unpleasant or something in between. So six senses. And when I was at school, I learned the five senses. So where is the sixth one? Well, in Buddhist psychology, the mind is considered a sense. So what sights are to the eye and sounds to the ear, thoughts, mental images are to the mind. And this is quite, it is interesting and it's a very, I think, it's a very skillful way of relating to experience. Very skillful way. It really helps to decenter ourselves from our thoughts, to take a distance from them. So this Vedana is something that happens automatically and also very, very immediate. We don't have to think about it. We don't have to form an opinion. Is this pleasant or unpleasant? We just experience it automatically. And it is something that is at its more basic level than emotions. It's more basic than emotions. To me, it's the most basic evaluation of experience that we have as human beings. And it is something that we share with, I think, with all forms of life. This very basic way of evaluating experience that we share with all forms of life. We seem to see that all forms of life get attracted to certain experience and try to avoid and to run away from other experiences. It is this basic mechanism of feeling something as pleasant or feeling it as unpleasant or something in between. So to me, some experiences are universally felt as unpleasant. For example, if now the temperature in this room was minus 20 degrees Celsius, I think pretty much all of us will feel that as unpleasantly cold. Conversely, if it was 50 degrees, most of us would feel that as unpleasant. Or when we are hungry, having eaten for, I don't know, 10 hours or 3 days, unpleasant. But actually, many, many, many experiences are subjective. The Vedana tone of many experiences are subjective. It depends on the constitution of our body, our personal biology. And for example, myself, I am quite sensitive to cold, so what may be a great temperature, perfect for a common breed, to me is unpleasant. Anything below 23, 24 degrees is a little bit unpleasantly cold. That's me. But also, it depends on personal experiences that we have had in the past. If you had a bad experience with something, you may feel every time you come in contact with that thing as unpleasant, or vice versa, with pleasantness. For example, I grew up in Andalusia, and that's quite dry and arid. And actually, the dryness, you know, seeing the landscape brown, to me, is pleasant. And if you have been brought up here, you are more used to the green. If you see something, the landscape brown, maybe not that pleasant. But it's also related to our cultural heritage. For example, in food, in some Asian countries, they eat insects. For that, just the sight of that may be felt as unpleasant. Or if we put it in our mouth, unpleasant. For something that has been brought up in that culture, that's quite pleasant, maybe a delicacy. But Vedana can also be dependent on our state of mind in the moment. Our state of mind in the moment. And that's, you know, that's quite changeable. The state of mind is quite changeable. If we go to a supermarket and we are in a grumpy mood, we experience almost everything as unpleasant. You know, people getting in our way to get something from the shelf, or why are so many people queuing and I am in a hurry, and you know, everything can elicit that tone of unpleasantness. But if we go to the same supermarket and we are in a good state of mind, it's just the opposite. You know, you see everybody and you smile and they smile back at you, and it can be a pleasant experience just to go shopping and, hello, how are you? So Vedana can depend also on our state of mind in the moment. And very importantly, Vedana depends on our view, how we are framing the experience, how we are viewing the experience we are having. But normally we are not aware of Vedana, and I mean this is happening all the time, and we are not aware of it unless it is so intense that it breaks through the threshold of consciousness. Something is very unpleasant, very loud and a strident noise, we are immediately aware of that and of the unpleasantness. And if something is very pleasant as well. But normally, most of our common experience, we are not aware of this aspect of experience, the Vedana. It passes through unnoticed. And the Buddha in this second of the Satipatthanas actually encourages us to pay attention to this domain of experience. Pay attention to the Vedana. Just know if the experience you are having is also experienced as pleasant, unpleasant, or something in between. And you may be wondering why should we do that? What's the point? The Buddha thought it was very important, actually, and I agree with that, that it's very important to pay attention to this domain of experience. Because our lives are normally driven by our reactivity to Vedana. Our biologically rooted reactivity to pursue what is pleasant, or to try to hold on to it, to try to get rid of what is unpleasant, or try to avoid it, to come into contact with it, or to be completely oblivious to what is neither pleasant nor unpleasant, sometimes referred as neutral. And this habitual reactivity is what is problematic. Not the Vedana. It's the reactivity to the Vedana what can be problematic. Because in our pursuit of what is pleasant, we may do things that are unwholesome, not good for us or for others. Also, the very thing that we may pursue because it is pleasant may bring further down the line suffering. And this is very obvious in some addictions, but even in not that those extreme cases, we just want the immediate gratification. And that immediate gratification may bring later on unwholesome consequences. In trying to avoid the unpleasant also, we may run into problems. Again, in what we do to avoid what is unpleasant, we may do unwholesome things that may bring suffering for us or for others. And also, you know, the thing that we want to avoid because it is unpleasant, it may be something helpful, something wholesome, that is going to be good for us. It's like the medicine that is bitter. and we don't want to have it because of the unpleasantness, of the bitterness. Actually, it is good for us if we do it. Some people see sitting in meditation as that, as a medicine that is bitter. But actually, with time, it becomes very sweet, very pleasant, if we persist, if we persist. And also, we can run into conflicts with people, and many of the conflicts we have with people are born in this pursuit of the pleasantness and avoidance of the unpleasantness. If I want something because it's going to deliver pleasantness for me, and you also want it because of the same reason, we've got a conflict there. I see you as an enemy. But I think more fundamentally, if we just go along with the reactivity to Vedana, we are not exercising our freedom. We are not exercising our freedom. And this human capacity to choose. And that's really, really important. That's really crucial if you want to live a human life. If you want to live a human life and to develop your full potential as a human being. Yesterday I quoted from Seneca, this Stoic philosopher, and Marcus Aurelius. He was another Roman philosopher, a Stoic philosopher, but he was also a Roman emperor. He was an emperor and a Stoic philosopher. Very interesting. And I'm going to quote from him. He said, "We dance like puppets on the strings of our impulses. We dance like puppets on the strings of our impulses." Very succinct, but very beautifully put of way of putting this reactivity to Vedana. Dancing like puppets on the string of our impulses, of our reactivity. So just to make clear that, Vedana is not a problem, it's just part of being human, of the fabric of being human, and not only of being human, of being a living being. We can see this reactivity in every living being, from the most simple to the most complex. And we are not trying to get rid of Vedana. I mean, that's not possible. That's not the aim of the practice. What we want is to be aware of the reactivity and somehow to be able to choose another way of responding to experience. If we do that, we may start to experience what in Buddhist terminology is termed as unbinding ourselves from reactivity, which is another way of saying of liberation, becoming free from this reactivity. Because it is possible to feel something pleasant and not contract into pursuing it, or trying to hold onto it, or try to intensify it, or try to replicate it in the future. And it is possible to feel something as unpleasant and not to contract into pushing it away or trying to avoid it or trying to destroy the cause of it or trying just to numb your consciousness in order not to feel it. It's another very sad strategy that may be used. And that doesn't mean that we don't appreciate what is pleasant, if it is good. It is possible to experience something pleasant and appreciate it without contracting into reactivity. And there is a difference between appreciation and craving or clinging. There is a difference between hosting what is lovely and good in our experience. We can do that without contracting into, I really want to hold onto this. And I want this to last forever, or I want to experience this more intensely. We can, enjoy lunch, really, the nice, pleasant feelings of lunch, without thinking, I must buy Gaia House cookbook and make this recipe when I get back home and really experience it again. We can do that. Just experiencing what is lovely and good in the present moment without clinging onto it. And we can, be experiencing something neutral and becoming interested in it. And see what happens when we become interested in something neutral. For example, the breath. Very neutral feeling, hedonic tone. What happens if we pay more attention to the breath? It becomes interesting, more interesting, and even it can become pleasant. So I'm just going to give you some pointers to practice with this if you feel drawn to it. And the first thing that I would suggest is that we start to pay attention to this domain of experience, to start to notice Vedana on purpose, to become sensitive to this domain of experience. And we can do that in formal meditation, and we may do a little bit of a guided meditation on that. And you can do that on informal meditation, or in your everyday life experience. As you walk, for example, or as you smell something, or the sounds you are hearing, what comes in your field of vision, the shapes, the colors, the objects. I may experience it as pleasant or unpleasant, something in between. After becoming sensitive to the Vedana, we can pay then attention to our reactivity to Vedana and just notice our habitual reaction to the pleasant, to the movement, to try to get it, or to try to get, you know, to hold it, to hold on to it, or to replicate it, to notice that reactivity, and inversely with the unpleasant, that contraction of the body-mind to avoid it, not to experience it. And for that, you can pay attention to the mental talk. You know, when there is something very pleasant, I love it. Whatever it is, I love mashed potatoes, how nice. To, I hate this. Whatever it is, this noise, this pain in the body, I hate it. I really hate it. No, pay attention to the mental narrative. And you can also bring attention to your body, how the contraction in the body, because a reaction to the pleasant and to the unpleasant have the same sense of contraction in the body. The body contracts, either with a craving or of I want, or the aversion of I don't want. So there is a contraction in the body, and if we pay attention to the body, you can notice that. And also the third step, after being sensitive to the Vedana and noticing the reaction to the Vedana, the third step would be, is it possible to soften the reaction, to relax the reaction to the Vedana? Is it possible? If we notice that contraction in the body, is it possible to soften that contraction, to relax the body? For example, you may bring the breath into this. I find very helpful to breathe. When we feel the aversion to something, can I breathe with this contraction, with this aversion to what is unpleasant? Can I breathe with it? That can soften that contraction, that reactivity. To the degree that we are able to soften this contraction, this reactivity, to that degree we are able to open a space between the contact with what is experienced as pleasant or unpleasant and the reactivity to it. And in that space that we open between contact and reactivity, in that space is where freedom lies. Or we may say, that space is the space of freedom. And from that space, we then have an opportunity to choose a response. To choose a response that can come from discernment, from wisdom. So let's leave it then here. And you may want to just stand and stretch if you want. Just coming to sitting. And bringing your awareness to your anchor in the body, or to the sensations of the breath. You may want in one of the six senses to pay particular attention to the Vedana of whatever you are experiencing. For example, in the realm of touch or bodily sensations, sensations in your legs. Or in your hands, are they pleasant or unpleasant, or something in between? You may want to pay attention to sounds. Noticing the Vedana associated to sounds. Or it may be that you want to just open your awareness to include any experience and just pay attention to whatever experience is most prominent. Is it pleasant or unpleasant? Or something in between? So this is an invitation for today to pay attention to this domain of our experience. Informal meditation, either sitting meditation or walking meditation, or, you know, in your, as you go, moving around, queuing, eating, in whatever activity you are engaged, you can always bring your attention to this domain of experience, of the Vedana. You know, everything that we do here is an opportunity to practice within the conditions that we have, of simplicity, of silence. So precious, those conditions. So precious, those conditions. And just a reminder of the importance of silence as a support for our practice. And you know, just notice if, for example, you are in your work period and, you know, you feel the impulse to speak something that is not strictly necessary. And just notice, you know, the idea of how pleasant it would be, you know, to have a little chat. See if you can pay attention to that as well, and to relax and to soften the reactivity. Just for the sake of maintaining those supportive conditions for our sake and also for the sake of everyone else. So Gavin will be saying more about also how to make the most of a work period as a practice, and a little bit more also about walking meditation.
I love this teaching, actually. Maybe you can sense the possibility of stepping off the treadmill of reactivity and entering into a much, in a sense, vaster relationship with life. This way that this push-pull response to pleasant and unpleasant kind of creates this prison experience that we find ourselves in. I don't know if how many of you in the hall heard our additional teachers come and visit in the last sitting last night. I start hearing some buzzing. There's a few things buzzing around at the back here. And it was so interesting actually tuning into the Vedana. At first it was kind of delightful. It was like, oh, how nice, you know. It's been raining outside and we have other creatures come in to join us in the practice. And I think I had an image of them maybe being quite small. And it was so interesting, the point in my mind where something clocked. So I'd seen a hornet earlier in the day. I thought, I think this is a hornet. The Vedana was very different all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. The same noise. I mean, this is curious terrain. And interestingly, I had one of my better meditative moments. I kind of felt the impulse, you know, that kind of pull. It was like a little shock to the system. And just felt that. And the Vedana kind of changed in its own time, and I played that little game with myself where I realized, you know, if I'm still, the hornet's very unlikely to come and do whatever it is that my system is fearful of, you know. So this is extraordinarily alive. As Ramiro mentioned, it's actually happening in every single moment. And in meditation practice, in any moment when we're aware, we're starting to interrupt this process of reactivity. And so this is extraordinary possibility right here. And just to remind ourselves, it's really helpful to relate to this practice as, in a sense, whilst we're here on retreat, a bit like an experiment with conditions. We're starting to get a feel for how the experience we have in the meditation hall during a sitting is not about how good a meditator we are in that meditation sitting. It's a lot to do with causes and conditions from what's gone before. And also, yeah, the willingness to attend in that moment. So there's something about we can't really evaluate this practice in the moment during any particular sitting. And it can be helpful to relate to what we're doing a bit like an experiment. Let's see what happens when we keep sowing these seeds. And the fruit will come along in its own time. We can't really control that. So in the walking meditation, continuing to be wholehearted, and so very much the invitation to include this landscape in the walking practice. You've still got the anchor, of the feet on the ground. Things feel like the mind's leaping around a lot. Come back to the experience of the feet on the ground. But if things feel a bit more gathered, then yeah, open up the awareness a bit. This sense of receiving life, and just be curious about the feeling tone experience. See if you can notice, what does it actually feel when my feet touch the ground? You know, the first few minutes might feel pleasant. After 10 or 15, it might be the knees start to feel a bit more stretched, maybe some unpleasant. Maybe after a while the feet on the ground doesn't feel so pleasant. This can often relate to thoughts in the mind about, I don't really want to be doing walking practice now. I'm not sure this is really working. Deep down we're quite simple beings. It's to do with feeling experience. And thoughts and emotions and various other things can happen from there as well. And if you want to, in the walking, also to linger a little bit more in the standing posture, if you like. We're a bit more familiar with this posture, and it might just be out there that you want to spend a bit of time standing at the end of your walking path. It's a lovely posture for this sense of receiving life, receiving sound, birds, sound of the breeze. Buoyed on by this sense that we're not, when we show up with awareness, it's when we don't have awareness that the patterns of reactivity happen, do their thing. Find ourselves by the tea urn without even realizing it. So, oh, here I am. And so we can include in this, you know, some of the hindrances, how they feel, you know. The doubting mind for sure will be playing a good appearance for some of you. Is this working? Am I doing it right? This made sense yesterday, but it doesn't make sense today. Just sometimes just trusting in your intention. Just keep exploring for yourself. What is this? But just to clarify, we had a question about, you know, what's the difference between awareness from the head towards the feet and awareness sensing in the feet. This can feel a bit counterintuitive, but in a sense the difference is, you know, often when we think of awareness, you know, being aware of something over there, aware of the chair here, we could end up relating to our feet a bit similar. It's like, I'm aware of my feet down here. And that's okay. But in terms of what the Buddha was pointing to, he's talking about the awareness that actually knows the contact of the feet on the earth. It's that simple. The actual sensation. There's some awareness there that knows that sensation. That's the awareness to come back to. And it doesn't mean somehow we are literally just our feet. We just become our feet and the rest of our experience, we don't notice. It's not quite like that. But you might, as you walk, just know, yes, I'm knowing the sensation of the feet walking in this moment. Oh, the last step, I didn't notice that. And in this next step, I do. This is mindfulness engaged in that moment. So very simple. It is something we know, it is imminent. But we're also noticing awareness doesn't block other things out. You know, it's also notice other things. And you know, this invitation to be wholehearted, it's interesting, isn't it? You know, do I kind of go with the reactive patterns that are starting to break out? Disconnect, go and do something else, often involves finding a little bit more pleasure somewhere. Or do I see what happens when I don't go with the reactive patterns and go with this flow of meditation? Buoyed on by the sense that there's something possible here as we start to unbind, as Ramiro put it. So we continue our experiment of cultivating these qualities and seeing what fruit comes along, and we can't control that. We don't know when it's going to happen. So similarly, what a helpful teaching to have as we engage in work, meditation practice. You know, so often there'll be something along the lines of, I've got something to do, and until I've done it, there's an unpleasant, slightly unpleasant feeling experience. And that's somehow linked with something in the future that when I do it, I can let go and then I'll feel pleasant again. And in between, actually there's a lot of reactivity. And there's this idea that there's somewhere other than the present moment. And what we discover through meditation is there is nowhere else other than the present moment. There's a whole bunch of stuff that we can add to it. And I would argue, but explore for yourself, that the most efficient way is when we're fully here. Not just necessarily efficient in terms of getting things done quickly, but efficient in terms of our energy, efficient in terms of being able to respond to other things that might come along. But I have a sense extraordinarily productive. You know, have you noticed how unproductive you can be when you're in a rush? Used to have days at home where I'd just be flapping around and nothing, I hadn't really achieved anything. So you can be playful in the work, meditation. It's like you can see the way that we can deviate towards sort of avoiding this kind of reactivity of aversion or grasping after the future that doesn't exist. And if we're willing to feel those when they happen, and pause, then as Ramiro was pointing to, we might feel, what's the appropriate response? And we can do mindfulness quickly. Sometimes we do need to do things a bit more quickly if that feels appropriate. But the advantage of slowing down here is it helps us get off the treadmill of the reactivity. We sort of, generally slowing down, it helps us feel the pull. It's like, oh, I want to go faster now, so we know we're not being driven. But yeah, for sure, you can be playful with doing things a little bit more quickly. At times, the walking or the work. The idea of the practice is, yes, we can bring mindfulness into doing things at whatever the appropriate pace is. And sometimes, if somebody was about to get run over by bus next to us, it would be extremely appropriate to move with good awareness very, very quickly. And productivity is an interesting one, you know, just again exploring this sense, if I take care of each moment, as Mahatma Gandhi says, you know, take care of, might not have been him that said this, but you know, take care of this moment and the next moment will take care of itself. So we can explore this in the work meditation as well, and just that there is only this moment. And so whilst you're here, in terms of experimenting with this, just a reminder, you don't have to finish your work task. You kind of, in a sense, we're prioritizing this practice slightly. You know, we've got the opportunity here, and it's great that you offer what you do, but if certain things aren't quite finished, it can be a great exploration of the unpleasant Vedana of not having finished what I wanted to finish. And it's really, yeah, it's really helpful to be with this sense of imperfection sometimes, because this is how the world is. So, kindly, relaxed, patient, curious, explore how being wholehearted in this practice is actually one of the best things you might be able to do for yourself. You know, and if you find yourself not doing that, be kind to yourself right there and then, and just begin again and feel what's the appropriate response. but you might get a sense of the prison that we somehow create for ourselves and the possibility of starting to unbind from it. See what you discover. So the sun comes out. Good analogy for this light of awareness, and we continue to practice and explore with this precious time we have together, the support of each other. And in terms of continuing to take care, and also around, it does relate to Vedana and feeling tone, Ramira and myself thought to stay in the hall for a bit just now for anybody. You've had some time to really, those of you who are new to this, sort of find your way with the posture. Feels like a good time maybe to offer some extra support with that if you feel like you're almost there or something needs tweaked or something's still not quite feeling right. So we'll stay in the hall for the next little while, and then for everybody else, it's walking. I just want to check, do you want to add anything else, Ramiro? Yeah, so walking practice, folks, beginning right here. Go well, everyone.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.